This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Trump took to the road Friday, where he delivered a pep talk to workers in the state of South Carolina. He was on hand to see Boeing show off its new Dreamliner aircraft.
The name says it all. Dreamliner. Great name. Our country is all about making dreams come true. Over the last number of years, that hasn't been necessarily the case, but we're going to make it the case again.
Meantime, Mr. Trump is still trying to stabilize his national security team. On Monday, he demanded the resignation of National Security Advisor Michael Flynn following revelations about Flynn's contacts with Russia. Mr. Trump's choice to replace Flynn, retired Vice Admiral Robert Harward, turned down that offer. Mr. Trump could interview national security candidates over the weekend. U.S. Defense Chief James Mattis told European allies American security is tied to that of Europe, describing NATO's principle of collective defense as a bedrock commitment.
It is a fair demand that all who benefit from the best alliance in the world carry their proportionate share of the necessary costs to defend our freedoms. And we are committed to passing those freedoms intact to the next generation.
He made those comments at the Munich Security Conference. President Trump last month labeled NATO as obsolete, but Mattis said the president now has thrown his full weight behind the alliance. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has raised the need to, in his words, create a level playing field for trade and investment. That happened in his first meeting with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. Both met for about an hour on the sidelines of the meeting of the foreign ministers of the G20. This is VOA News. Chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, is in Turkey there for talks on the war against the Islamic State. Dorian Jones is following the story in Istanbul.
General Dunford met his Turkish counterpart, Hulusi Akar, at the NATO air base of Incirlik in southern Turkey. Talks between the NATO allies reportedly focused on Washington's ongoing support of the Syrian Kurdish militia, the YPG, in its war against the Islamic State. Ankara accuses the YPG of being a terrorist organization affiliated with the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK, that is fighting the Turkish state. Washington maintains its military is supporting the SDF, a coalition of Syrian forces including both Arabs and Kurds. The coalition has proven itself to be by far the most effective force against Islamic State in Syria. US and European special forces, along with American air support, have enabled the SDF to advance to only a few kilometers from the city of Raqqa, the self-declared capital of the jihadist group. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Oldest Muslim organization in the United States held its 7th annual Day on the Hill with a series of meetings with lawmakers. The goal by the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community USA was to discuss religious freedom, civil rights, and national security, with an added emphasis on getting across the message that most Muslims are peaceful. This comes as President Trump attempts to halt immigration from 7 Muslim-majority countries. Bob Michael, a highly thought-of U.S. member of Congress from the state of Illinois, who served as leader of the House Republicans and was skilled at seeking compromise, died Friday. He was 93. Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin remembered his colleague and friend on the floor of the Senate.
Every politician alive should aspire for that moment, like Bob Michael, when the last words of tribute to his public service are, he was the face of decency and public service.
Michael was born in 1923, served during World War II in Europe, receiving a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star. In 1956, he was elected to the House of Representatives, winning re-election 18 more times. Well, just in time for the U.S. President's Day on Monday, a new survey of historians on presidential leadership give the top 5 slots to Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Franklin Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, and Dwight Eisenhower. Barack Obama, who left office less than a month ago, ranks 12th for the first time in the survey of 91 presidential historians. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
is Russ Davis, and I welcome you to another edition of Jazz America here on VOA 1. This is a special presentation that I like to do from time to time as we talk to modern jazz masters as they tell us the stories of those who influenced them the most. I call this special Under the Influence. In the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking to some of the most famous artists around today: Stanley Clarke, George Benson, Dave Douglas, and Stefan Harris, and get the thoughts from them about artists from jazz history that influenced them greatly. But let's begin things with a salute to one of the great singers and pianists who certainly influenced a number of vocalists over the years. Her name, Nina Simone. She was born in 1933 on the 21st of February. Let's enjoy music from her 1965 release, I Put a Spell on You, and listen to the joyous song, Give Me Some, from Nina Simone to begin this edition of VOA's Jazz America. There's some new music for you from the man from New Orleans, trumpeter Nicholas Payton, from his brand new release, Afro-Caribbean Mixtape, and the song Junie's Boogie, the classic and the new, the best of jazz, past and present. We give it to you every week here on VOA's Jazz America. Today's theme is Under the Influence, as we talk to jazz greats of today who give us their thoughts about some of the artists who influenced them greatly, personally and musically. Let's get some conversation going with the great bassist, composer, and award winner Stanley Clark, as he gives us some thoughts about a gentleman who made quite an impression on him at a very early age, John Coltrane. Stanley, could you tell us about an artist that made a deep impression on you?
I remember I was about 16 years old. I was playing acoustic bass, and I came across this piece. At that time, I was starting to play transcriptions of pieces, and there was this composer, French composer, called Gabriel Fauré.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it was the first music that I played for the bass where the bass sounded like a solo instrument. Mm-hmm. It was the melody was beautiful. It laid on the bass properly. It was very easy to play. And because it was so easy, all I had to worry about was the interpretation of the melody. And I thought, wow, this is great. So then I got into French composers, and I came across Debussy and all the rest of them. And that was the first, you know, I loved the harmony. I know it was within the orchestral domain, but the harmony, Ravel, was just all so serious, just harmony. I fell in love with the harmony. Then I got, like Jean-Luc, I got into Stravinsky, which I thought was a great combination of soul and science coming together. You know, he was.
Oh, I like that phrase.
You know, and soul and science. I mean, there's a lot of people. Al's like that. That's that thing. And then from that point, I became obsessed with John Coltrane. I don't even like to talk about it, man. I mean, it was a sickness. I mean, a lot of my friends in Philadelphia, they still tease me about it, because I was a guy that back in the day when Motown was like really big, I used to go to the dances, and they say, oh, here comes Stanley, crazy Stanley, because I was so tall. And I hung around with these guys, and we could all fight. I'd come in with the Coltrane records and just, all right. I became a bit of a nut with that stuff. But I tell you, man, it was, for some reason to me, Coltrane's music, I mean, he had a tremendous facility, you know, technique on his instrument. But for some reason, it was the first jazz music that struck me in a way almost religious, like something other than the music. It was like something spiritual. Yeah, it started my sense of spirituality, to be quite honest. A sense of God, sense of something other than what we see, you know, the sense, that started there with his music. And I've actually never talked about it until now, you know, I became obsessed with that. So I don't even know what I learned musically from it. I couldn't even tell you. All I can tell you, it probably slips out here and there. I mean, I dedicate pieces to him. I'm sure there's harmonies that I use, but that music affected me.
I remember Jean-Luc Ponty telling me how when he first heard John Coltrane, it changed his life as well. Well, here's Stanley Clark with Jean-Luc Ponty on violin and Al Di Meola on guitar, as the trio they called The Rite of Strings, and Stanley Clark's composition dedicated to John Coltrane and simply titled Song to John on Jazz America from VOA 1. Thank you. The great John Coltrane, recorded live in 1961 at the Village Vanguard, the famous club in New York City, with a live version of his classic song, Impressions. And he certainly left an impression on not only Stanley Clarke and Jean-Luc Ponty, but also many others down through the years in jazz history. I've got more of our Under the Influence special as George Benson joins us just a bit from now. But first, I want to invite you to get in touch with me by email. It's very simple. I'll give you the email address to which you can write with your questions, comments, or requests for music. Here's the address, jazzamerica@voanews.com. That's jazzamerica, the two words written as one word, @ voanews.com. jazzamerica@voanews.com. And here's a message that I received with the subject line, Greetings from Djibouti. And it came from an Englishman, Mark Dixon, who wrote me with a long story about how he is stationed in Djibouti with the UK's Royal Naval Reserve working on a project there, and that he had never heard jazz before, but he enjoyed listening to English language radio to help him kind of settle into the new culture there in Djibouti, and he heard VOA and heard my program. Well, he now loves jazz and wants to hear more about it, so I sent him a long letter with some suggestions on classic jazz releases, and I also answered a question of his about English jazz musicians. I gave him a list of some of the most influential and my favorite English musicians, and that included this great singer. So, just for you, Mark Dixon, in Djibouti via the UK, here's one of your fellow English people, and she is Claire Martin. Let's enjoy her vocalizing here on VOA's Jazz America.
No, you can't tell by the touching. They don't come on a hovering and a bothering and a grabbing and clutching. Some cats know how to take it nice and slow. But if a cat don't know, a cat don't know. Some cats know how to stir up the feeling. They keep fooling around till you're halfway to the ceiling. Some cats know how to get the honey flowing. But if a cat don't know, a cat don't know. Some cats know just where it's at.
Thank you.
Just a few years ago, some classic live and studio recordings by the legendary guitarist from Indianapolis, Indiana, Wes Montgomery, were discovered and released. It became an album called Echoes of Indiana Avenue, recordings from 1957 and 1958 by Wes Montgomery, and that was his version of Thelonious Monk's classic Straight No Chaser. This time in a different kind of style from what Wes Montgomery established as his signature style, that sliding octave style. But however he played brilliantly, and he influenced a number of guitarists who followed him, among them George Benson, who tells us now how he fell under the influence of Wes Montgomery here on VOA's Jazz America.
I met him when I was about 17 years old in Pittsburgh. I was working at a local club across the street. It was a bar. We were playing behind the bar on a little tiny stage. And he was playing across the street at the top jazz club in Pittsburgh. A very swank joint. And they regularly had great jazz artists, you know, of that time period. And he was there that week. His brother came over to see me, Buddy Montgomery, and he said, wow, he said, man, you got some great facilities. He said, you should play jazz music. And it never dawned on me to do that before, you know. I said, no, I could never play jazz because I thought you had to have, you know, special skills to play jazz music, and indeed you do. But I didn't think it was for everybody. I didn't think, you know, that I would be able to learn it. It was either, you were either born with it or forget it. And I said, no, I could never play jazz. You know, I was doing R&B and rock and roll and pop music then. And I went across the street to hear Wes play. I remembered his name because for years, musicians had been talking about a guitar player in Indianapolis who they said was the greatest guitar player in the world. I said, well, where's he at? And they said, he won't leave. He won't come out. And then finally I saw his name. I said, I know that name. So I had to go over and hear him, you know. I knew he was great because the top guitar player in my town was at the club, and he never came uptown to hear anybody, but he was there that evening when I walked in. When I saw him, I said, well, this Montgomery guy must be great. So when I heard him play, I didn't hear anything that I could identify. He didn't play with anything that was familiar at all. I couldn't steal anything from him, you know. And he had quite a unique style, but it was very easy to listen to and beautiful and greatly engineered the way he put things together. I met him, and I even asked him, like I used to ask everyone, I said, would you teach me something? You know, I was young and eager to learn. He said, no, he said, I don't think I can teach anybody anything. He said, I'm too busy trying to learn how to play myself.
That's.
And I said, what? You know.
He was probably saying he was discovering himself every day, you know, and just as I'm sure you do, you understand that now. It's so funny to look back and see something, a point like that, you know.
You hit it on the head. That's exactly right. It took me years to understand exactly what he meant when he said that. I thought he was, you know, being kind of selfish. I thought, oh, he just doesn't want me to learn, you know.
Well, George Benson certainly did learn, and here is a testament to how well he learned his guitar lessons. We all remember Wes, the name of the song, from his live release, Weekend in L.A., on Jazz America from VOA 1.
I heard you talking about this. Now you're talking about that. So talk about this. Don't talk about that, cause this is where it's at. Come on.
great master of the organ, Dr. Lonnie Smith, from his latest release, Evolution. Talk about that. More Jazz America coming up. Stay tuned, please.